This is a Roundtable Rewind.
Let's start with there. We'll start there, the bubble. Michigan State got that win that you guys said, man, if they got over Michigan, just one of the two that locked them in. Izzo in March, he got it done with a big win over Michigan.
Boy, and they showed up with a lot of motivation. It was a tough game to watch first 5-6 minutes. Nobody could score. I mean, it was just such a physical game. But, you know, 4-9 to start the Big Ten schedule for Michigan State. They closed winning 5 of their final 7 and 3 top 5 wins in the last 16 days. With that brand, I don't think there's any way they're out now, Brown.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Lunardi actually had them among the last 4 byes.
That's right.
So, I mean, I would assume that Michigan State did enough. I think done away with that name on the jersey, being Michigan State, being a name brand team, being in the Big Ten helps. Having Tom Izzo on the sideline helps. I mean, if they've got everything going for them, I would expect them to be in this thing.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Michigan State, even the top of the last 4 byes.
Yeah.
So that went over Michigan. When you beat Michigan, who is one of the top 3 teams in this thing, you know, that moves you in. Louisville is safely into the tournament, according to Lunardi. Georgia Tech's into the tournament. VCU's into the tournament. Last 4 in, as we head to the tournaments, Colorado State, Boise State, Drake, and Xavier. Drake becomes the interesting one. They have a lot of wins and, you know, could have locked up their automatic bid, but they lose to Loyola of Chicago, and now their resume looks very thin, as they said, on the next-to-last transfer spot out of the thing. So they'll be interesting to watch. And, you know, not really a whole lot of name brand left on the bubble. Syracuse is there, but Duke isn't anymore because North Carolina blasted them and eliminated Duke's chances of getting in unless they win the ACC tournament.
Yeah, I mean, the way I figure it, Duke and Kentucky obviously have to win their conference tournament to get in. I don't know in my lifetime that we've ever had that situation in the same season where Duke and Kentucky went into their conference tournament both having to win the conference tournament to get in.
Yeah, again, it's been since 2007 where Duke has been on the 4 line or higher.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's whether or not they're going to be a 1, 2, 3, or 4 seed. It's not whether or not they're going to get in this tournament. And for them to be sitting at 11-11, and I thought they would come out and play motivated basketball on Saturday. That was actually my lock. Now, yesterday we had Michigan State, but my lock of the day on Saturday was Duke plus the 3 points. And you're right, Dunaway, they got blasted. Our man Garrison Brooks, former intern, goes down early in that game. He did bounce back, had a nice game for Carolina, but Duke to be sitting at 11-11 overall this season, I don't know how that happens.
Yeah, I mean, even in the worst of, I mean, everybody has dealt with COVID this year, so it's not as if Duke is on an island having to deal with. I mean, I know they voluntarily shut down some pre-conference stuff, but you know, you look at a team like Baylor and Texas, they've had to shut down in-conference schedule.
Yeah, Michigan too.
Michigan, they've had to shut this. So they've managed it. So I don't think you can just entirely blame it on this situation. I don't know why. I mean, Kentucky is a little bit easier to figure. I mean, Calipari just kind of he whiffed on a class. I mean, when you do it the way he does it, you're occasionally going to whiff on a class.
Yeah, but still, when you misevaluate talent at Duke or Kentucky, there's a difference in misevaluating talent at those places in a place like maybe Boston College or Iowa State.
I don't disagree with that, yeah.
So there's still no excuse to be sitting where they are. I just don't get it.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. What a run by North Alabama in the A-Sun tournament. They made it to the championship game and lost a heartbreaker battling back in the second half. 79-75, Liberty beat North Alabama. Oak Mountain's Peyton Youngblood had 26 in the semis and then 14, big second half for Peyton for North Alabama. Even if they had won that, I was confused. You know, I don't know how long it takes when you transfer from one division to another. Even if they had won that, I don't ever remember seeing this. Usually the conferences don't let you play in your conference tournament if you can't be the automatic bid team. But they were ineligible for the NCAA tournament because they're still paying their transfer time dues. The amount of time it takes for them to be eligible for an NCAA championship as they traded classes from Division II up to Division I. And even if they had won, Liberty had already locked in the NCAA tournament bid. And that would have been a shame, but it was fun. I guess it wouldn't have been a shame. It would have been good for North Alabama to hang a banner. But I was all fired up after they won the semifinals. I tweeted out, I was like, man, Youngblood goes for 26. They're 40 minutes away from going to the dance, and instantly the North Alabama people on our feed started going, we can't go. We're not eligible. I don't know if I've ever seen that before. Usually,
I had
Auburn's not in because they can't you know, they can't go to the NCAA tournament, so they're saying that you can't go to the SEC tournament either then.
Yeah, I mean, I did not know it either. I guess it's on me for not paying closer attention to this. I didn't think it would be a big story, but I didn't know it either. And it is a little anticlimactic. I mean, that is the whole point. I don't guess it's the whole one. No, it is. It's the whole point of these small conference tournaments, these one-bid leagues, is that championship game is everything.
Well, and that's why we tune in and watch.
Yeah, it's everything.
Because everything is on the line for these guys to have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to actually play in March.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm with you. I don't know why you would – I mean, on one hand, I can see why you want North Alabama. They're a member of your conference, so you want them to experience everything they can. It's not their fault, obviously, as they're not on probation for cheating or anything like that. But there again, your whole conference tournament setup is playing to that championship game so that it is a one shot for glory for everybody in your tournament.
Yeah, that's my point, Brown. Let's clean up this NCAA rule book. We talk it all the time. If you're going Division II to Division I, you're moving to what appears to be a tougher division, right? Then let's just assume that there's going to be some natural transition for you. You shouldn't have to sit out any amount of time. If you're taking Idaho down from Division I football to Division I AA, okay, you got to sit out a little bit. I understand that. You're taking, you know, your Division I talent, supposedly, and you're moving down in classes. If you're going down from D1 to D2 or to 1AA, yeah, okay, I get it. But if you're coming up from D2 to Division I,
why would you sit out?
Why would you have to sit out?
Yeah. What are we worried about?
I mean, if we're going to Hoosier this thing up and go from D2 to D1 and make the NCAA tournament, let those kids play.
Yeah, I agree completely.
We'll go Bad News Bears 2 on them. Let them play. But they come up 4 points short. But that was a fun part of the weekend as well, watching the Lions play. And then Bruce Pearl got win number 600 before we get to Alabama and setting the table for the SEC tournament. Bruce gets win number 600. Rockstar, if you'll give me cut number 7, here's Bruce. He admits, he goes, he keeps count of the scoreboard, the wins in his career, but all of a sudden 600 slipped up on him because of the way this season had went.
I knew I was getting close, but I honestly did not know that I could get it. Because let's face it, when we were losing early in the year, you know, I was like, not even thinking about it and not really think it was possible. But Wes Flanagan came in the office. He goes, you get this one Saturday, it'll be your 600th. I said, I don't think it'll be my 600th. I think I know I'm getting close. I don't think. He said, Coach, it'll be your 600th. So we didn't say nothing to the team. I didn't say nothing to the team. The biggest thing is I'm old, been doing this a long time. But I'm just grateful to my coaches, staff, managers, the athletic directors that have hired me and retained me. The fans everywhere, you know, for giving me the opportunity, trusting me to lead their programs. And I'm truly grateful, humbled, blessed. God's blessed me beyond what I deserve. But I keep score. I do. And 600 is a big number. 700 would be even better.
It's Bruce Pearl after getting 600. And really, that's where the focus for Auburn fans began, right? 600's nice, the way the season ended, you know, better than it could have been, but still a losing record, no postseason. And they're more interested in Bruce's 700th and possibly 800th win, what's to come for Bruce Pearl. And getting to 600 is an accomplishment, not a whole lot there, not a large number of coaches to reach 600. But then every milestone you hit after that, that air gets a little thinner, 700, 800, 900. Then you get into the Pat Summit and the Elite, the Coach K's territory at 1,000. So Bruce is approaching that. He's got a very challenging offseason with two or three guys that will take a look at the NBA.
Well, yeah, I mean, you think about it. Well, Senior Day, they decided to not have Senior Day because you have no seniors on the roster. So I guess there's no reason to do that.
That's a good point.
You know, Sharif Cooper, as electrifying as that guy was in moments, to only play 12 games, you know, if you're an Auburn fan, you probably – I mean, I just don't see any way he's coming back. I know some of the guys you mentioned, maybe JT Thor, such raw potential there. You know, I don't know what happens to this roster. Such a young roster, so much potential if some of these guys would come back.
Well, I mean, the good news for Sharif Cooper and for Auburn is that it is so much of a better system in college basketball than college football. These guys can go through the process and still come back to school.
Yep.
So it's not as if he's got to make a decision over the next couple of weeks and then he's held to that decision regardless of what happens. You know, he's got all the resources at his disposal to make an educated decision. And I don't know what that decision will be. I mean, we've seen him as high as a lottery pick. There are some that have said that his play this year has played him out of that lottery pick situation. Not that he's played poorly, but that he has shown an obvious flaw in his game, that he can't shoot from the outside. Others have said, don't even worry about that. I mean, the NBA can fix him shooting from the outside. He shoot 10,000 shots a day for what they're paying him.
Yeah, now that is a great point, Brown, the one on that you can put yourself into the NBA and then pull yourself out at the 11th hour. And that's what you would expect to happen in the next chapter of Cooper and maybe even Thor. And maybe even another name or two. I don't know. But you expect at some point they announce they're going to put their name in for the NBA evaluation and go through the process. And then if you need to at the end, pull your name out. So that's something you'll keep an eye on if you're an Auburn fan and not get too upset when you see that process begin.
Can I make a point, though, about Bruce Pearl? If you look at the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame, the kind of the Mendoza line is 600 wins.
Yeah.
Well, think about it. There's only been 63 coaches that have ever done it. I mean,
yeah.
I think there's 340 active coaches right now.
Exactly.
Only 21 are active that have 600-plus wins. I mean, that is rare air.
But most of the guys in there, like I'll read you the most recent inductees that have kind of hit that 600 mark. Rick Pitino, national champion. Jerry Tarkanian, national champion. Nolan Richardson, national champion. Gary Williams, national championship. John Calipari, national champion. Tom Izzo. Bill Self. Now, Lefty Driesell didn't win one, but he won almost 800 or more than 800 games, I think.
Yeah, but do you have other guys that have got 600 that didn't win national championships?
I don't. I was just reading you the most recent kind of his, you know, the contemporaries of Bruce Pearl, because I think Dunaway, the 600 wins kind of would be the first mark of getting into the Hall of Fame. He went to a Final Four. I don't know. I mean, he's kind of played himself with that borderline. Now, Bruce is a polarizing guy, too. I don't even know who votes for the Naismith Hall of Fame, but there are some people out there that don't like Bruce Pearl, obviously.
Yeah, you think he's more polarizing than Rick Pitino?
Well, I mean, I read a lot of polarizing names on there.
Yeah.
So I don't know that necessarily keeps you out.
I mean, what do you guys think the number ends up for Bruce? Around between 750 and 8?
I mean, I think Bruce Pearl's got a good 10 years of coaching left, doesn't he?
So 10 at 250, I mean, that's 850.
I mean, 850 would be
25 wins for 10 years. I mean, that's a lot of wins.
That's a lot to average. Let's average 20. Let's say 20. I mean, 200 more wins, that'd put you at 800. I think you'd be a lock at that point.
My dad came up, and by the way, he says hi to everybody, Rockstar, LT, Damian, Brownie.
Mr. D.
He brought me some peppers that he said, be careful with these peppers. If the boys eat them, they got a little heat.
I need some.
I'll pass some peppers along to you from my dad. Got a little heat on them, he says. But he was frustrated with Alabama basketball. Turned it off early. Several people I talked to who were watching Alabama play on Saturday, you know, locked into the SEC tournament, locked into the NCAA tournament, SEC champions already, and the way Alabama started on Saturday, a lot of people said, sunny and 74 outside. If they're going to play like this, I'm going to go ahead and just turn this off and leave. And then something happened at the final 8 minutes or so of the first half and the second half as Alabama found their A game. Here's Nate Oates talking about Alabama's win and after the slow start, how they sort of delivered that in-focus performance.
Other thing you see, when you play hard and you're focused and locked in like we were the last 8 minutes of the first half and the second half, then everything goes a lot better on offense too. Defensive intensity really picked up in the second half and his offense followed. So I thought everybody's just intensity level rose. That's what we told them. Let's just play like we did for that last 8 minutes. That looks a lot more like Alabama basketball than the first 12 and the score will take care of itself.
Now, my dad has a personality like Wimp, but he doesn't know basketball like Wimp does. But he doesn't think they can get past the Sweet 16 because of how inconsistent they are. And that was sort of their game in a nutshell on Saturday. They could look as bad as they did early on. They could have 11 turnovers at a half. But then all of a sudden, they start playing so well, and you're like, that team could be dangerous. Yeah, they are a hit-or-miss team.
Well, they are. And look, Georgia is no good, and I'm not going to pretend otherwise. I mean, Arkansas did the same thing Alabama did. Both of these teams slept walk through a game that was pretty meaningless to them. So Georgia is no good. But I think what you take away from that game, Lance, is, you know, Alabama slopped around, didn't look good at all, turned it over a million times. But, boy, when they flip that switch, they're a different team. And they've got the ability to do that. Now, you hope it doesn't come down to that in NCAA tournament game, because most of the time you've waited too late when you have to flip that switch.
Yeah, but to be able to do it in 40 minutes, yeah, be down 14, still score 89 points, turn it over 22 times, and win the game by double digits. I see what your dad's saying, Dunaway. I talked to an Alabama fan this past Saturday, and they said, man, there is no way Alabama's going to win more than two games in this tournament.
I love people saying that without even seeing a bracket.
That's what my dad says. So your friend agreed. Yeah. Were you actually talking to my dad? Did y'all meet and I didn't know about
it? No.
I need my peppers.
This was a big basketball fan. He said, man, I think this team's good, but I don't trust them. And we're talking about a team that's sitting at 21-6 and won a SEC record for them, 16 games.
Yeah, I mean, it's – I think you got to be careful with declarations like that, because teams play differently once tournament time gets here. And sometimes that's an experienced team, like a Michigan State has been historically, where there are times they don't look like the best team in America. And then Tom Izzo gets to the tournament, and all of a sudden, boy, they're just a different basketball team. I mean, that happens.
Yep.
Now, Alabama doesn't have that kind of tournament experience. I get it.
No, the good news is you got three, you know, seniors that have a huge impact on this roster, though.
Yeah, so I don't think – I get why people might be a little apprehensive about Alabama right now, but I wouldn't crumble them up and throw them away just yet. I mean, I would at least wait and see how they react to being in the tournament.
Of course not, and I think that was my point, Brown, was that – this team is hard to put a finger on, because they don't let 11 turnovers in the first half disrupt them from continuing to play hard and eventually delivering a good performance. And they backed that up with 11 turnovers in the second half and still played really well down the stretch. They are a diverse, talented team that doesn't let their bad portions impact their good portions. And I think that actually is a great personality when you get into the tournament, because I think everybody has adversity at one point in the tournament.
No doubt. And Alabama is a quality defensive team. And that will take you a long way in the NCAA tournament. You hear a lot of axioms like, you know, it's a guards tournament. You have really good guard play. I've just always thought, and one reason, now this year might be slightly different depending on, you know, which arena you draw. But a lot of times in NCAA tournaments, you get in those uncomfortable shooting settings, and it can be a little bit of a slog for both teams. And I've always thought that the good defensive teams will benefit from that.
Yeah.
And Alabama is a good defensive team. Now, Alabama also likes to shoot the outside shot. So if they get in one of those arenas where they're not comfortable and they don't have the good sight lines, it could be a bad offensive day for them.
But again, you got to clean up the turnovers. You got to be able to hit the free throws. I mean, shooting 65% from the stripe, that's been uncharacteristic this year.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, those are all you. Listen, what was the final turnover number in Athens? Was it 23?
I thought it was 22.
11
and
22. Okay. Yeah, 22. I'm willing to say, in almost any tournament, even if Alabama's in the 215 game, you turn it over 22 times, you're probably going to lose an NCAA tournament game. Maybe even the 215 game. So, I mean, Alabama cannot turn it over like that. That goes without saying.
Alabama still a two seed in Lenardi, still in the same place as they were when the weekend started. So a good place for the Tide as they head to Nashville. Wednesday is Vandy and Georgia, just one game, not two games to start off the SEC tournament, because Auburn not there. So Vandy and Georgia at 6:00 on Wednesday, all these games on the SEC network for the first couple of days. Then Thursday's a full slate. The Kentucky-Mississippi State game at 11 on Thursday is one for you Alabama fans to watch, because you get the winner of that game on Friday at 11:00 for the Crimson Tide.
Who do you think Alabama – we could do a poll on this. Who do you think they want to win that game? Because Cecil Hurt, I saw the tweet. I didn't know what the exact number was. Alabama, do you know the last year – I don't know if you guys saw this tweet from Cecil. The last year Alabama beat Kentucky in the SEC tournament, do you know what year it was?
Wimp in 1987.
I go 88.
83. 1983, according to Cecil Hart, the last time Alabama beat Kentucky in the SEC tournament.
So
0-11.
Sam Bowie was part of that team.
I guess so. Yeah, yeah. 0-11 since then. So Alabama, and they, you know, 11 times they face Kentucky. I don't know how many times. It seems like they're always in Kentucky's half of the bracket. They may just not make it to the game they play Kentucky.
Yeah, I don't think you want to play Kentucky.
No, that's who I want to play, because you've played Mississippi State twice already. You just played Mississippi State. Both games have been sort of a slugfest.
Just giving Alabama problems, yeah.
Yeah, so I would take Kentucky, and And then that way, if you do lose it, the nation looks at it like Kentucky's fighting man there. That's a blue blood trying to get into the NCAA tournament, and then Alabama just goes on to the NCAAs. That's who I'd rather play on Friday. It doesn't matter for Alabama's seeding or anything. They're going to stay the same.
I think it matters for confidence, though. If you're one and done in that tournament,
yeah, but
and you're talking about a team that doesn't have any NCAA tournament experience, I think it's important for Alabama to at least win one game in Nashville.
Yeah, I don't know how important it is, but I trust you if you think it's important. I don't think it's that important. These conference tournaments, if you're locked in already and you're not really playing for seeding or anything like that, I've never really enjoyed the big conference tournaments. And I know Wimp puts a lot of stock
in
them.
Just about to say that.
Yeah, I mean, Wimp.
Yeah, somebody Thursday does.
Wimp
yeah.
loves
I'm
it.
I'm just saying that one point, Dunaway, that this is a team that they just don't have tournament experience. So I think to get a game under their belt, I think would be important.
Yeah, I mean, Selection Sunday could have been yesterday for me in my boat, and I would enjoy it a lot more. This whole week, once we get through these automatic and these one-bid league games, a few more today, a few more tomorrow, once we get through those, the ACCs, the SECs, the Big Ten, the Big 12, yeah, man, it's a great tournament. We've seen all these teams play each other in the regular season. All of them most likely are going to go on to the NCAA tournament. Very little storylines for me in any of those tournaments ever.
Yeah, but if we get Alabama-Arkansas in the SEC championship game, you don't think that's fun?
Oh, it's terrific.
Yeah,
it's fun. It'd be fun if we all
– Michigan-Illinois, I just think there could be some really good matchups coming up.
Did you guys get a chance to watch Coming to America 2 over the weekend?
I have not seen it, no, but I have seen a lot of feedback on it and none of it good.
Yeah, so what I did, Saturday night we had planned on watching it with the kids. And I checked Rotten Tomatoes, and then I reached out to a couple of people that had seen it. They said, don't bother. Then I threw it out on Twitter yesterday, and I think 9 out of 10 people that responded said it was completely awful. So I'm not even going to waste my time with it.
Yeah, I saw the same thing, that it was not good. I wasn't that excited to watch it anyway. But I watch a lot of bad TV, so I may dial it up at some point just to see if I hate it as much as everyone else. I would imagine it, like a lot of sequels, it's hard to recreate magic the second time around.
Well, there's a thing of waiting too long.
Yeah.
Maybe this would have been funnier in 2000, but waiting this long is just – and a lot of things I've said is just a lot of the rehashed jokes. It's a star-studded cast. It just doesn't hit.
Yeah. It's feels like a money grab, really.
I think it was.
Amazon Prime, they missed it.
Yeah, I mean.
But Eddie Murphy's such a talented guy. Eddie Murphy might be the most talented guy to ever do
crap movies.
More garbage than quality.
But his quality, though, is really, really good.
It's timeless.
Yeah, his quality is really good, but boy, he's got some bad stuff out there. Like, I just don't think Eddie ever said no, did he?
Apparently not.
At some point, though, if you're Eddie Murphy, they're going to close that casket one day. And what the crap do you care that you made Pluto Nash? You made money off of it and lived a happy life in Norbit, right? I mean, what is it? I get it. Like, I don't know.
Like Daniel Day-Lewis.
I was about to say, Daniel Day-Lewis, he's not going to say yes to everything.
Yeah, he's going to take a select movie every 3 or 4 years.
But guess what? There'll be a day where you close his casket, too, and it ain't going to matter. So if I'm not going to begrudge Eddie Murphy for doing Norbit and Pluto Nash and making money off of them.
I guess my point there is you just would think with the concept of Coming to America, and I know it's been 30-plus years, that he could make something like that work.
Well, normally 30 years later, Dunaway, you just do a remake of it. But there's zero chance you could remake Coming to America. Well, zero chance.
Let's remake it and rate it PG-13 this time.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but Eddie Murphy, considered to be one of the greats, great comedic guys of all time when it comes to stand-up comedy, though, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Delirious and Raw are two of the best ever.
Yeah.
So I don't care. To me, I don't care what you do. For him in movies, it is almost like he is a Hall of Famer in baseball and stand-up comedy. So now he's off trying to golf or play, football when it comes to his movies. Yeah. And he's had enough movie success. I don't think the bad ones will ever define him.
Yeah, so I guess my point is the people that criticize Eddie Murphy for doing money grabs are criticizing Eddie Murphy for doing money grabs from their 9-to-5 job living in their normal house while Eddie's doing whatever he wants to living in a mansion. So I don't think Eddie cares that much that people think he did a money grab with coming to America, too.
Well, sans the Daniel Day-Lewis's of the world, 99% of Hollywood does money grabs.
Exactly.
Well, I did watch a, you know, it's not great TV either, but our buddy Jay Farrow, the comedian, right? That's his name. I got it right. Was in studio with us. Uh-huh. He had something that was on HBO this week, 2 Minutes of Fame or something, where he plays a comedian from Birmingham, Alabama. He takes some shots at us about, you know, a boring town, you know, just in his stand-up act being from Birmingham, Alabama. And I was wondering, as he created that role, because he sort of wrote it and produced it, I was wondering if he took that from his time with us in studio.
Yes. How bad was it?
Oh, I mean, I thought we had a good visit with Jay.
Now, Chris Kattan, we could understand.
Oh, Chris Kattan. First of all, he's not funny, so we can't do a comedy special. But, I mean, Jay Farrow seemed like he enjoyed his time with us. I certainly enjoyed his time with us.
Yeah, and he started following us all on Twitter. I thought, wow, Jay really likes us. Maybe he was just using us as a as he was writing this project for HBO. I think it was called 2 Minutes of Fame. So when you guys watch it, let me know if he was taking a shot at our town or was just being a funny comedian struggling to make it in the world. But it was I found myself watching all of that late. I mean, it had to be like 1 a.m. Saturday night, Sunday morning.
It's better than me, Dunaway. I watched a documentary on Netflix about the biggest art, not heist, the biggest art scandal in U.S. American history.
Huh. Wow. Interesting.
It was pretty fascinating, though. It was a bunch of, you know, a bunch of art that was redone by this Asian painter.
Right.
And he basically signed the artist's name to it in this gallery, the Knobler Gallery, which was one of the most infamous galleries in America in New York City. They were actually selling the prints for $8 to $10 million.
And the prints were essentially worthless?
They sold counterfeits of over $80 million.
Wow.
It's a pretty fascinating documentary, actually.
Hmm. I assume you turned off of the paint drying, grass growing documentary that was on the other channel to watch that.
Boom, roasted.
How'd you get sucked into that one?
No, I was just going through like new releases, new documentaries that were out there. It was actually really good.
Yeah, I find myself watching that stuff too. Hey, football over the weekend. Jack State wins again, 27-10 over Tennessee Tech. Uriah West continues to run the football well, over 100 yards. They're 1-0 in the OVC, and I think 4-1 on their combined season from fall to spring. So Jack State playing really well. Samford loses to Furman, 44-37, that game in overtime. I watched a little bit of that one. Hamp Sisson is the Mountain Brook quarterback playing for Furman. How we let him get away, man. 277 throwing, 3 touchdowns through the air, 1 on the ground, and he was a difference maker for Furman as they beat Samford 44-37 in overtime. Hamp got it done for the Furman Paladins there.
Boy, that's the worst way to lose. When you lose to a quarterback that played high school football, I mean, how far is Mountbrook High School from Samford's campus? I mean,
2.5-3 miles.
Yeah, that is the worst way to lose, isn't it? Isn't it? I mean, and you may have never wanted the guy, or may not have worked out. I don't know. You know, I don't know the whole story behind that recruiting battle, but boy, that's a tough way to lose.
Yeah. So other games, Jackson State, Coach Prime wins again, beat Grambling 33-28, and Alabama A&M got South Carolina State. They're off to a 1-0 start, so the Bulldogs get that one. 31-7. That was this past weekend in the FCS. The mock draft from Todd McShay out on Friday. We have seen it happen, I think. Was it Ohio State that had 3 players go in a row recently? Has that happened? Because the way McShay lays it out, he has Devontae going 8th, Mac Jones going 9th, and Patrick Surtain going 10th, and then a 4th player, Jalen Waddle, going 11th. Boy, if you had Alabama players go 8, 9, 10, and 11, you know, it's not 1, 2, 3, 4, but that's pretty darn impressive in the top level, and to have it go back to back to back to back would be crazy.
Yeah, I think Ohio State had 3 of 4. I think that's what it was. But, you know, I said earlier, or we were talking about this a couple of months ago, Alabama could have 5 of the top 15 go.
Yeah. And it just adds to, by the way, that signing class that continues to rack up just amazing numbers on the games they won, the championships they won, where they were drafted, the Heisman trophies. I mean, or Heisman finalist, really, and a Heisman trophy. It's just incredible what that one signing class has continued to produce.
Let's continue our football conversation and look at the ACC coming up this year and where we rank the top 5 coaches in the league. It's going to be our Baumhauer Spotlight today, Rockstar.
The Baumhauer Spotlight.
Hey, if you're looking for a great lunch or dinner, we invite you to Baumhauer's Victory Grill, and they've got a new dish that we sampled just a couple of weeks ago. You're going to love it. It's the Alabama Hot Chicken. It's only available at the Huntsville or Vestavia Hills location right there on Highway 31. It's fresh, southern marinated, boneless, skinless chicken thigh, smothered in their made-from-scratch Alabama hot chicken sauce, served alongside a bed of savory greens, smoked Gouda cheese grits, and a home-style biscuit. You're going to absolutely love it. Available for a limited time only. Get in, try out the Alabama hot chicken at Baumhauer's Victory Grill.
The question was simple. I said, give me the five best coaches in ACC football right now, and unanimously, Dabo Swinney was number one. Not even close there, and then it gets really interesting after that.
It does. I guess when we get to the end of this Friday, we can go back and talk about, you know, how difficult it was in each conference, what was the most difficult. I would say after Dabo Swinney, when I was trying to find my next four, there are a lot of other guys. Now, Mack Brown has kind of separated himself from the pack, but boy, the pack there is big in the ACC.
Well,
it's just not a lot to pick from.
I think the way you got us, the criteria was based on skill set now.
Right.
That's right.
I couldn't separate career achievement, though.
It's hard, but I mean, it's easy with Dabo. Skill set now is the same as career achievement.
Yeah. I mean, look, Dabo was a slam dunk 1A, and there was nobody even close. But Mack Brown, that was what I was going to get to. You know, not great years the last couple of years, surprising years at what he's been able to do at North Carolina. And now he's got them probably a preseason top 10 team. To me, it was an easy two just based on his track record.
Right.
What he did at Texas, winning a national championship, playing for another, and what he's done in 2 years at Chapel Hill.
I'm with Lance on this. It's impossible to ignore what Mack Brown did at Texas Dunaway, but the rest of the conference is just really average at head coach. I mean, nobody stands out. Nobody could compete with Mack Brown.
Well, to me, number three, and I think he ended up being number three on our list, right, Dunaway?
Yes, he did.
Dave Clawson. I just think with a better job, Dave Clawson can coach. I mean, Wake Forest is a difficult place to win.
Yeah.
Jim Grobe did a good job there. I think maybe Clawson's done a better job in a more competitive ACC.
Yeah, I had Clawson number three as well. I don't know that we never got to see Jim Grobe. I know he was interim at Baylor, but we never really got to see him. Some people talked about him maybe getting the Alabama job at one point. He won like this at Wake Forest, actually to a higher level in one case at Wake. We just never got to see him in that other job, and I don't know that we'll ever get to see Dave Clawson again in another job to see if he's just figured it out at Wake or if he's this good a coach, but what he's doing at Wake is impressive.
Okay, let me walk us through this a little bit, okay? So the question I asked is, LT and Brownie were pointing out there, is give me your top five coaches in the ACC, and you don't really take career accomplishments into consideration here. It's where they are right now. So Dabo was unanimous number one. Mack Brown was unanimous number two. So Dave Clawson comes in at number three. So let's talk about Mack at North Carolina and what he's done. LT, you say it is better than expected. And when you say that, it's because we really thought he was just going there as a placeholder in history because he was so good there before and he knew the people that was doing the hiring. We really never thought that he would put together a program that would be a top 10 and an ACC championship contender. But he's done that in a short period of time.
No, you go back to, you know, the mid-90s to late-90s, you know, his final days at Chapel Hill when Florida State was really dominating that conference. He had back-to-back 10-win seasons before he got the Texas job. Then obviously wins a national championship 2005, plays for another in 2009. But you're right, it seemed like a placeholder. It seemed like a Band-Aid hire, a lazy hire. He goes 7-6 in that first year. All six of those losses, I think one possession losses, and then last year they're 8-4. And again, this year, the expectation is going to be 10 wins.
Yeah.
And with Dave Clawson, Brown, this is a guy, I don't know if we really consider him a championship contender, but he falls into he's doing a lot in a tough job, what appears it to be at Wake Forest.
Yeah, I think we'll see this as we go through the rest of these conferences, is that in a lot of ways, it's hard not to weight what you do at the lesser schools. And Wake Forest is far from a football power in the country or even in the ACC. But after his first two seasons where he was 3-9, 3-9, he's had a winning record every single year. That's five straight winning records until this COVID-shortened year. Four straight winning records, excuse me, until this COVID-shortened year. He was 4-5 this year. I don't know what he would have been in a normal year when he would have been able to play some Pats. He had a conference games and not just basically a full ACC schedule.
Probably another 7-6.
I'm willing to say he would have probably had a winning year. I think he could have put together five straight winning years. That's good coaching at Wake Forest, in my opinion.
Yeah, and the timing works out really good in our discussion here because Wake Forest is one of those teams that when you kick off this year, they could be loaded offensively. This could be one of those dark horses in the ACC. So us having him three behind Dabo and Mack probably fits pretty well to what we're going to see this season. Bronco Mendenhall was fourth on our list, and Dave Doran was fifth. For Bronco Mendenhall, he was on your list as well as mine, LT. What do you like about Bronco at Virginia?
Well, I never understood why he went from BYU to Virginia. I thought it was a weird move. I thought he was going to one of the more difficult Power 5 jobs. And you saw what he did at BYU, and again, it was hard for me to separate what he did there and what he's doing now in Charlottesville. But, you know, 3 of 4 years at BYU, well, he was coached there 6 years, but 3 of his final 4 years, 11-plus wins. And then he takes over, and when he gets to Virginia, 2-10, 6-7, 8-5, 9-5, they go up and wins every single year until this COVID year. And again, it was a 5-5, but it's kind of hard to get a gauge on that year. And I don't know how you feel about this, Brown. I think it's one of the more difficult Power 5 jobs.
Virginia?
Yep.
More difficult. You'd say it's in the bottom half of the Power 5?
I would.
Probably.
Yeah. If it wasn't.
The academic restrictions.
Yeah.
If Mr. and Mrs. Barber had not done what they did back in the day, it would have been a lot harder.
Well, that and then Herman Moore, right?
That's right.
I mean, those are the Barber brothers, Herman Moore. Sean Moore was the quarterback, no relation. I mean, those are about the only Virginia players I can name over the last two decades.
But that was kind of the last time they were relevant. I mean, I guess they were solid top 25, like,
yeah,
kind of like they are now.
Yeah,
but that
I agree
was
with you.
25
yeah.
years ago.
And Dave Doran was five. Who were the people that are not in our top five? I find very interesting. Okay, not in our top five. Manny Diaz, not in our top five. Justin Fuente, not there. Yet, Jeff Collins, not there anymore, David Cutcliffe. Any thoughts on those guys who are not there?
Well, I mean, if you want, I could tackle any one of those.
Well, let's pretend I just asked you. Grab one of them. Jump in there.
I mean, for me, David Cutcliffe, if he hadn't had the last couple of years, would have been a solid number five just because of how difficult that Duke job is. But It's become what Duke was before David Cutcliffe again.
And listen, I've had to own this. You know how I felt about Justin Fuente when he took the job to replace Frank Beamer. I loved what he did at Memphis, and I thought he won't be there long. He'll go and probably improve what Beamer was the last few years and get a bigger job out of this. And there's just no two ways about it. He has done a poor job at Virginia Tech. He's 38-26 in his time there. He started 10-4, and it's kind of been a downtrend since then. So he's done a poor job, Jim. I wish I didn't have to be wrong about this, but I was wrong about Justin Fuente.
Yeah, and Manny Diaz, you know, I think Manny Diaz is solid. I still consider him, I don't know why, a better defensive coordinator than a head coach. This is going to be a big year from him, but he goes 6-7 in year one, 8-3 last year. But with De'Aaron King, I think there was even more of an expectation than 8-3. Yeah.
I had Manny Diaz on my list. You two did not. So as we put this together, he is not in our top five. I had him in there, and I think Diaz makes that list. But, you know, Brown favored Pat Narduzzi more.
Yeah, and I did too.
And you had Dave Doran on yours, and so did Brown. So Doran edges out Manny Diaz and Narduzzi to make our list. Those are our top five ACC coaches going into 2021. Joe Oliva wanted to fire Les Miles, according to emails released back in 2013. He didn't have support to pull that off. And in hindsight, it looks like Oliva was a couple of years ahead of what eventually happened. And he finally was able to get rid of Les Miles, but he didn't do it with cause. Now, those emails have come out, and everything that went on in 2013 in Les's world has come out, and Kansas, in hindsight now, has suspended Les, put him on leave, and Jeff Long's doing a full review. And as Paul touched on earlier, Jeff Long has got a tough decision to make if he fires Les Miles for what happened at LSU back in 2013.
Well, because it could blow back on Jeff Long, too. Now, they say they did their due diligence, but, you know, I could see people at Kansas saying, wait a minute, time out.
This report was out there.
Yeah, if you're having to fire this guy for what happened at LSU, how did you not already know about it?
Yeah, and the problem is, you know, I don't know if it's a problem, but Jeff Long and Miles, they've worked together from the 80s all the way to today. I mean, there's a lot of familiarity there. The easy route for Long is you get rid of Les Miles. He's 67 years old, and he hasn't been winning. He's 3-18.
Well, yeah. I mean, the whole if all of this is true at LSU, the whole reason he kept his job at LSU was that he was winning. Well, he's not winning at Kansas. Now, I have no earthly idea where Kansas turns for a head coach at this moment in time, Dunaway. It would not be an attractive job, and it would be a difficult hire, but I just don't see how you can keep Les Miles. I'm with Paul. I think he's done. In coaching, period. I think this is the last we've ever seen of Les Miles.
I mean, Tom Herman just took an analyst job with the Bears. I'd give him a run if I was Kansas.
You would start with all the former head coaches that are analysts, right? There's some in Tuscaloosa. We got one with the Bears now.
Well, not as many in Tuscaloosa anymore, but I'd give him a run.
Well, I mean, I just
or Major Applewhite, who's a coordinator at South Alabama. I mean, there's some names that could excite me if I was a Kansas fan, I think.
Yeah, and some of those guys might take it. I don't think Tom Herman would. Some of those guys might take it, but, man, that's a tough job. Nobody has won there. Nobody. I mean, even Mangino got fired, and he took him to the Orange Bowl.
Well,
I mean,
so Glenn Mason, though, had pretty good years.
I'll go look it up. I don't know what Glenn Mason's
– I think he averaged about 7 or 8 wins a year when he was there, which, I mean –
I'd be shocked at that.
I'm telling you. I think Glenn Mason was there from, like, 90 to 96, 97.
Glenn Mason went 47-54-1.
That's not bad.
Well, he had a 10-2 in 1995 that took him to the Aloha Bowl, and they finished actually ranked in the top 10.
Rock chalk.
He had an 8-4 in 92, which took him to the Aloha Bowl, and he was in the top 25.
KU.
primarily, I mean, he was better than I thought.
Yeah.
I'll give you that, Lance. 47-54-1, and within the Big 8 / Big 12 back then, he was 25-38-1.
You guys will give me Kansas fans. It's all about basketball. They would take that record, just give me something that's competitive.
They're so far from that right now.
Well, it's kind of like Arkansas with Brett Bielema. Yeah. You know, if you could go back to the Brett Bielema days, you'd take that.
Yeah, another job that is basketball-oriented is Indiana. And Indiana coach Tom Allen has gotten a new contract today, a 7-year contract, amending his old contract. And he's now going to make – now wait for this – the Indiana football coach is now going to make $4.9 million a year running through 2027. Indiana is paying their football coach virtually $5 million a season.
The man's got some incredible agents, obviously. And I can't believe we have lived to see that. And we go back frequently on this show when these numbers pop to the outcry for Nick Saban making $4 million a year. And that was back in 2007. And here we are a number of years later, but the Indiana coach is making almost $5 million.
I can't believe it.
I really can't either, but he is so deserving of it. Well,
brings up a big question that Royal Payne asked. He says, there was a time, and we do this on the show all the time, especially with guys like Mark Stoops, that you take a job, you win, and the first chance you sniff 8 wins and have a chance to move on, you move on. And Royal Payne says, leaving Power 5 jobs because money is it going to be a thing of the past, leaving the mid-tier Power 5 job and jumping to another Power 5 job that's a little better up the food chain may not happen as often now because you can stay at your current job, try to build something, and still make enormous amount of money.
Well, and I don't know all the particulars in the language of the contract, but I do remember it came out, I think when the Tennessee – I was trying to remember which job opened that this came out on Tom Allen is the – how big the buyout is. He's not going anywhere. I mean, he has married Indiana. And the guy coached high school football, I believe, in the state of Indiana, if I remember his backstory right.
Yeah, I mean, he seems to be a guy that loves the program. The players love him. You got to be very content where Indiana is. I think if he's realistic, there is zero chance he ever wins a Big Ten.
Well, probably not. But, I mean, he has lived to see Northwestern play in the Big Ten championship game.
That was what I was going to use, Brown. If you're Indiana fans – if you can get from Tom Allen over the next decade what Northwestern's gotten from Pat Fitzgerald, I think you would take that.
Oh, absolutely, based on where it was before. But realistically, you guys will give me where the Big Ten is right now, where Ohio State is. It seems a little far-fetched, right?
Yeah. It does.
And especially when you're playing in the East. If they
were
in the West.
That was going to be my point. They're in the wrong division. If they could be in Northwestern's division, they would be a lot better off. But, I mean, if I'm Indiana, I am thrilled with Tom Allen. They've got bigger issues basketball side. You know, I saw after Indiana lost this weekend and probably ended any sort of discussion of them being in the NCAA tournament, Pat Forty tweeting that the AD has a serious decision to make on Archie Miller, who I imagine Tom Allen's making more than Archie Miller, I would guess, at $5 million. He deserves more. He's a better coach.
I would say Archie's probably right at three.
Yeah, but Tom Allen's the better of the two coaches, and Dunaway, Tom Allen has got them thrilled right now, and they're about to have to hire a basketball coach probably.
More likely to get fired first, Sean or Archie Miller?
I'm guessing Sean's going to survive this. Now, the institutional control part of that gets tricky, but he wasn't necessarily named in any of this. It was all Book Richardson, and I can't remember the other coach's name. But, you know, obviously there's the institutional control component that Sean Miller would have to ask for, or answer for, excuse me.
Yeah, the Arizona head coach, if you're not familiar with the name there. All right, 9:26 on the Jocks Roundtable. Before LT tells you about another one of our great sponsors, Pat Smith, who you hear on Three Man Front, just tweeting out that Bob Stoops will replace Urban Meyer on the Fox Big Game pregame show. So it'll be Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, Brady Quinn, and now Bob Stoops, which by week three, Brown, I think, would make Bob Stoops the hottest name in the USC coaching search at that point, right?
That's about right, Dunaway. I thought Pat was going to say that Bob was going to be the next coach at Kansas.
You know, when Dunaway started the sentence, I thought that's what was about to happen, that he was going to be interim coach.
And then I thought Bob had gone insane.
Yeah, I was like, what is Bob thinking? He saw Kansas every year.
But if you sit on Fox every Saturday right next to Bush and Leinart, all of a sudden, you become a hot name in USC coaching circles, don't you?
What's going to be interesting? When does the Pac-12 come up in our top five coaches this week?
We're going to do that on Thursday.
Will Clay Helton possibly be in that top five?
Ooh, that's a tease right there, Lance.
I already know the answer. I've got everybody's votes. I've already built the graphic. Watching some basketball yesterday with a friend of mine, Mark Richard, the AD at Montevallo. We were talking about the tournament, his women's team, Montevallo, going to the NCAA Division II tournament, first time in program history. Congratulations to them. And he also asked me, he's like, dude, how much weight have you lost? And I was like, 45 pounds. And he goes, how'd you do it? And I said, it was easy. It was Way to Wellness. And he goes, tell me about the Way to Wellness program. And I said, Mark, it's funny you should ask.
This is great.
It's funny you should ask, Mark. they've got no contracts and no sign-up fees. And it's almost like I just started reading it from a sheet of paper where I would tell them that there are no cookie-cutter plans. It's no one-size-fits-all. They have an individual plan for you. And for me, it involved four protein bars, my own lunch, and my own dinner every day. And you can find out what it would mean for you to use the Way to Wellness program by going to aplanforme.com. Aplanforme.com, that's the website. You get a free consultation with no obligation. You can call them up. 205-994-2393, 994-2393. Tell Chelsea when she answers the phone that I told you to call. And it's Way to Wellness, Way to Wellness, a program there to help you out. It's your journey to healthy living. You know, when I do things like that, I realize I'd be a horrible actor.
Yes.
I'm not a good actor.
It starts crumbling, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Later, Mark asked me if I had four good tires. Rockstar, let's.
We're not to that yet.
Sorry. My apologies. I'm in a rush.
Don't jump the script.
Got to put a little something in between here.
Right.
And that little something is talking about how bad of an actor I really am. I'm not good at impersonations. You know, my wife is really good. She's almost rockstar-esque at impersonations.
Really?
Who does she impersonate? Very well.
Yeah.
That British accent?
She has several different characters that she can go into, and they just crack me up every time.
Is this date night stuff?
She has some she's got a little island one that she does, like we're down in the Caribbean. I like that one a lot. Yeah. The British one is spot on.
Yeah. British actors are the best. Maggie's so good.
She's not very good with the northern accent. Like when she tries to say tournament, she's not good at that. How do Pat Bradley and the northern
tournament
people?
Tournament. Yeah. The NCAA tournament.
She's not good at that. All right, that's enough time kill. Let's do four downs. Brought to you by Vulcan Tires.
Yeah, four great locations done away. Gardendale, Hoover, Moody, and Trustful. Make sure you take your vehicle to Vulcan Tire and Automotive. They take care of your vehicle, so your vehicle takes care of you. Locally owned and operated business by Birmingham guys. Vulcan Tire and Automotive, making tires great again.
First down.
Who wins the next UAB Conference Championship first, Andy Kennedy or Bill Clark?
I mean, Andy's got a legit shot. This week, I mean, it's – I mean, you would give him tournament championship, right? It doesn't have to be the regular season.
Yeah.
I mean, Andy's got a legit shot. It comes down, in my opinion, to that Friday night game. If you beat Western Kentucky, I think they'll be the conference champions. I would probably go Andy here.
A lot of people back for that UAB team again, and their defense ain't going anywhere at UAB. And if they can find any offensive consistency, I'm actually going to go Bill Clark next year and Andy just missing the tournament this year. So I'll take Bill Clark with that answer.
It's tough. I think I would lean Bill Clark. It's amazing that we're talking about the sustainability of UAB football and really starting to dominate this conference.
Yeah.
I think Andy's got a great shot. I think Andy ultimately gets to the championship game. Who knows
this,
what happens
this week?
There?
If they get the championship, they're going to win it.
I know the semifinals are the more difficult, but you don't know that.
Well, I mean,
they're going to be
feel
favored.
Good about it. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm not going 100%, but I'll go 99%.
99, huh?
Second down.
Okay, better chance of happening. Mick Cronin gets UCLA to a Final Four, or Chip Kelly wins the Pac-12 for the Bruins.
I'd go Chip Kelly winning the Pac-12. It's a very average conference in football, even below average probably.
It's been a slow build, LT, but this could be a turning point year for Chip there at UCLA. And
yeah, I agree. They're never gonna... Thompson-Robinson yeah. is consistent at quarterback. The way they played last year, again, they're going to miss Demetric Felton at the running back position. But, UCLA seems like they've turned the corner. At least they're ultra-competitive now in that conference. And when you look in the Pac-12 South, if USC takes a step back, which I believe they will this year, they could win the South this year.
That's what I'm saying. So, yeah, I'm going to go football in UCLA here. I mean, getting to the Final Four is just hard. And I agree with Brown. This is a lukewarm Pac-12.
And Mick Cronin's history in the tournament is not a good one. As a coach. Now, he's not done it at UCLA yet, but he had a lot of early exits in his time in Cincinnati there, so he doesn't have the best tournament record. But he's done a better job than I thought at UCLA. I just looked his record up. 19-12 in the shortened season last year, 17-6, 13-4 in conference this year. He hasn't been bad at UCLA.
Yeah, just lost a heartbreaker to USC this past
they're
week.
Just so far off the radar.
Third down.
Better chance of next championship in Wisconsin, Giannis Antetokounmpo for the Bucks or Aaron Rodgers for the Packers?
I think I'd go Aaron Rodgers here, Jim Dunaway. They have been so close the last couple of years to getting to that Super Bowl.
I'm going to go Aaron Rodgers as well. It seems like the Bucks missed a window, and I don't know if they can get through the Nets this year. And I know adding Blake Griffin doesn't mean that much.
The Nets were the Sixers. I mean, I would have thought that the Bucks, the Nets, I thought were going to be really good with the additions, but I still thought the Bucks were the team to beat in the East this year.
Yeah, but then you add Blake Griffin over the weekend. He probably will play, just 3 or 4 significant minutes a game. That's not huge, but what the Nets have put together, Nets, Sixers, and, who knows who else can be competitive down the stretch that keeps the Bucks from getting there. I'm going to go Packers.
Fourth down.
Brown, for you, a couple of celebrity birthdays.
Oh, I love these.
So, rock star chime in. Freddie Prinze Jr., 43 today. James Vanderbeek, 44. Better career.
James Vanderbeek.
I don't want your life.
See, he had varsity blues.
I want to hear that again just so I can make my decision. Dunaway, what did he say?
I don't want your life.
I don't want your life.
Was he also a True Grit? Was he Rooster Cogburn?
I like them French fried potatoes.
So he had Dawson's Creek and he had Varsity Blues. Freddie right. Prinze, I forgot. I know what you did last summer, a couple of things. But he
Scooby-Doo.
Did land Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Yeah. Scooby-Doo, that's right.
See, I think I would almost lean
I think
Prince
I'd go
Jr.
Freddie Prinze, yeah.
No way.
Yeah, well, I mean, I agree with Lance.
That's a career accomplishment.
Marrying Michelle Gellar, Sarah Michelle Gellar. Did they marry or did they
They're married, yeah. No, she kept her name. But.
Yeah, that's all right.
Sarah Michelle Gellar Prinze Jr.?
Yeah, it's going to be a long one. Dunaway, that's a pretty good win right there for him.
Is it really?
Dunaway.
I mean,
neither Steffi
one of those
Graf?
Guys is doing right anything right now.
You like Steffi Graf and you don't like Sarah Michelle Gellar?
I mean, you're just assuming Dawson didn't date Jody or whatever her name was on Dawson's Creek.
Jody.
Yeah.
Let's look up.
Hey, so here's how big Vanderbeek is. I got a call. I was talking to a buddy. This is probably 7 or 8 years ago. And he was at a party with these guys in Vegas. And he's like, man, we're partying with Moxley right now.
Yeah.
Moxon.
I'm like, Moxon. I was like, who is Moxon? He's like, you know, the quarterback from Varsity Blues. And I was like, that's James Vanderbeek. He's like, I don't know what his name is.
He married initially, for 7 years, he was married to some girl from Ray Donovan, Heather McComb. I don't know her.
Oh, is that the blonde, the crazy?
I don't know her.
I bet it is.
And he is now married to Kimberly, who doesn't appear to be an actress.
But I think most people know him as Dawson. Was he Dawson?
He was.
Yeah, he was.
I never saw the show. But they know him as Dawson or Moxley or Moxon, whatever.
Moxley. But he also in the movies, and there was another movie, The Rules of Attraction. He was in that. That was a good movie.
I can't believe you don't like Sarah Michelle Gellar.
I don't.
Yeah, that shocks
her.
Me too, Dunaway.
I don't dislike her, but I mean, it's not like he slam dunk. He wins because he married Sarah Michelle Gellar. She's not that awesome. She's no Jessica Biel.
Well, I would agree with that.
Yeah, I think in her prime she was every bit of Jessica Biel.
I don't know. I think I go Jessica Biel there.
Yeah. Listen, Freddie Prinze Jr. never had whipped cream on his face.
I bet he did.
Okay. All right. Got it.
That was
my man Moxley again, Rockstar.
Moxon.
I know. Four Downs brought to you by our friends at Vulcan Tire and Automotive. Gardendale, Hoover, Moody, Trustful, Vulcan Tire and Automotive. Make your tires great again. For more information, VulcanTireandAuto.com.
I don't want your life.
That's spot on.
Sling blade.
Do it for me.
I don't want your life.
Yeah, a little bit more southern, less angry. I thought it was a good movie. I enjoyed that many times. And we've all done the rally once or twice, right? Is that where that came from? That saying, the old pee and rally, right?
Yeah.
Was that made famous from that movie, or was that a saying before the movie?
I don't know.
That's another movie I've actually never seen, Varsity Blues.
Very, very average.
Yeah.
It's no Sarah Michelle Gellar.
You know, honest to goodness, a little Rush Probst in the coach there, wasn't it?
Bud Kilmer.
John Voight.
Yeah. Bud Kilmer was his. Let's go.
That's your
Sounds
Gus
like
Gus.
Yeah, was he Gus?
That was Bud Kilmer, man.
Yeah. It is 9:43 on the Jocks Roundtable. Part of our show today being brought to you by our friends at Nut Dust. Yesterday at dinner, LT, the...
Oh, my God. Your conversations.
I mean, what did y'all talk about? Jim, can you run through all your sponsors before the food gets there?
4 hours, just do your weekend.
We talked about the show a little bit yesterday afternoon. Yeah. And they want us to get from the Nut Dust folks a list of the names they did not use submitted by our listeners for the female version of Nut Dust, and somehow post it somewhere. And I said we needed a not suitable for work. But can we get a list of the not used names?
Yeah, Rockstar, just throw one at me real quick.
No.
Yes, we can get that list. I will talk to Chris. We'll figure that out.
I don't want your dust.
My God.
But it's on a roll.